Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome back to Renee's Heart to Heart. This is Renee. Thanks for coming by. Well, today, according to our schedule, is Bullies to Buddies Day. But I thought before we get into the workbook, I would give everybody an update on my son. He's still at the hospital in Miami, and the doctor was with him yesterday, and they are still observing him. The doctor doesn't feel that he is completely out of the woods enough to be able to be 80 miles away from him. So Valerie had today off, so she went down last night to spend the night with him and be with him today. So he sounds much better. He's eating fine. All of the things that you look for in the overall well-being of someone, he's doing. But I do think it's good for him to stay relaxed and calm until we're sure that the dilation is going to buy some more time until they come to a decision as to what else to do. We don't want to be in emergency mode. So I want to thank you for the calls and the comments that I was given yesterday. He is doing okay. Like I said, he's in a fairly good place and eating good. So I have high hopes that everything is going to be fine. So I'm going to bring in Shell, and we're going to talk about the workbook today. He's laid out some rules here for us that are kind of interesting to look at. And this is for the benefit of people who are teachers or caregivers to children, daycare centers, things like that. Some of the things that are in this workbook, that's why it makes the workbook so valuable. He actually goes through different lessons that will help you get the kids to a better place. More than anything, it's not about retraining a bully. It's about retraining our kids so kids can't bully them. So, good morning, Shell.
Good morning, Rainey. Yeah, I'm glad to hear that update on Mike.
Yeah, it's still kind of scary, but said, he's yesterday his voice sounded a lot stronger, which means he's getting enough air in his lungs to emit a voice through his vocal cords. That's all good. And apparently the air thing or the fluid that we were worried about, Dr. Sarchi shared with us yesterday that he actually put air in there to give Mike's trachea room to get enlarged when he put the balloons in there. So it was something he did to prepare for the dilation of the trachea. So very interesting stuff, you know, when you learn about all the different things that are available to people out there that we never think of unless it goes wrong with us. And I think one of our friendly witch doctor shows will collect some things like this, not just about the trachea, but about different procedures that are done today to help people, deal with, if not eradicate issues like this, at least get them so that they can live comfortably. There's also a lot of the shots that are out there and stuff today that you and I have talked briefly about. You and I are not real advocates of the shots, but of course we also understand that if somebody can't walk and is in severe pain all the time, you have to make a choice between the shots versus oxycodone. So it's an interesting topic. So I think one of these days we'll both do some research on that and talk about that on the Wednesday show.
Sounds like a good idea.
Yeah, yeah. So today, though, I want to I want to first read a little bit. He's got, I skipped over one whole chapter because it was about how to instruct teachers and caregiver to children, different techniques of games to play and things like that. I thought it would be boring to try to explain it to anybody since it's just you and I. You know, in a classroom setup, it would probably be very interesting, but not for just you and I to talk about. So I skipped
That chapter that you skipped over, when they say, you know, it's information for, you know, teachers and caregivers, is any of the information there, would it be usable for a parent who's trying to be the teacher to their kids? Or is it strictly
not unless,
for that?
Not unless they have several children, because it's interacting.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Right.
And, yes, I think the answer to that would be, like, if you have four kids all under the age of five, like I did, then you could probably utilize it. But I think it would just be boring for me to go through it for the public in general. And this book is always available on Izzy's website, by the way, as well as a lot of other training manuals and information that he puts out there, CDs, all of the above. So, and he even goes into workplace. If you're an HR person in a big company, you may find his CD about bullying in the workplace very valuable, very, very valuable. So, but I want to read this. He says, the basic philosophy of the bullies to buddies approach is that by treating your enemies like friends, they'll stop being your enemies and end up treating you like a friend. I usually explain the rules after I play the golden rule game. The rules make it easier to understand what I'm going to be doing in the rest of the role plays for the variety of bullying situations. I explain the rules to anyone intellectually capable of understanding them. I am flexible about when I teach the rules and to what extent. I teach them to all adults. The extent to which I teach them to kids depends on their maturity, the nature of their problem, and the amount of time I have available for working with them. To younger kids, I may explain them in a simple way, and I may only give the rules I believe are pertinent to them. This is how he introduces the rules. This is him speaking. Do you want people treating you like friends or enemies? The kids always say friends. Can I get you to treat me like a friend if I treat you like an enemy? The child says no. And he says, that's right. If you treat me like an enemy, you're going to want to treat me like an enemy. If I treat you like an enemy, you're going to want to treat me like an enemy. And if I treat you like a friend, you're going to want to treat me like a friend. Right? And the child says, yes. And he says, everyone is like that. We feel like treating others the way they treat us. So I don't care how you treat me. I'm going to treat you like a friend, even when you treat me like an enemy. Because how long can you keep on treating me like an enemy when I always treat you like a friend? Before long, you're going to treat me like a friend because you will want to treat me the way I'm treating you. It's just the way it goes. We know when people are treating us like enemies, but we often treat other people like enemies, and we aren't even aware of the fact that we're doing it. So I'm going to give you some rules that you can use for treating people like friends. Then they will become your friends. And there's some, he's got a couple quotes that I love. This is by Ralph Waldo Emerson. The only way to have friends is to be one. Amen. And this is by Richard Nixon. Those who hate you don't win unless you hate them, and then you destroy yourself. Who'd have thought that Richard Nixon was that enlightened? Yeah, I love that too. Those you hate don't win unless you hate them, and then you destroy yourself. And you and I have never used that those words to say the same thing, but we say that all the time. It hurts you so much more than it hurts them when you carry on the bullying back and forth, especially if you're, you know, the kind of person who it kind of goes against your grain to be like that. It never makes you happy, that's for sure. He says, depending on the age of the children and their particular difficulties, I'll teach them some or all of these rules. I also give these rules to most adults I work with to help them solve their relationship problems. Number one is to prevent people from being your enemies. Number two is to stop people fighting with you. And number three, turn you into a winner. And number four, earn you more respect. And for rule one, he wants you to refuse to get angry. And it's not easy for everybody. Anger is a feeling we have towards enemies. If I'm angry with you, I am treating you like an enemy, and you will treat me back like an enemy. If you can get me angry, I lose. And you will keep on doing to me exactly what gets me angry. Now, let me say that I see this between couples a lot. A lot more than I really had any idea. Many years ago, when people put me in a position to try to help, I really started listening, I'd be like, oh my gosh, I can't believe she said that to him, or I can't believe he said that to her. She's not ever going to forget he said that to her, and vice versa. So you see it a lot with people who, at some level, love each other. And that love gets to be a bargaining tool or a bantering ram. You know what I mean?
Right, right. Well, Dr. Phil did a show on that once where he had couples in there, and they did love each other. But like you said, they said things to each other that caused such injury that even after they made up, like one of them or both of them were holding on to some of the really, really mean things that were said during the fight. And Dr. Phil used to talk about that. He said instead of fighting, he said discuss. He said it's just different of opinions. It doesn't have to evolve into a fight. He said that's a dysfunction with people today, and it's rampant. He had done this before he had his own show. This was one of the shows he had done while he was still going on Oprah. This was many years ago, obviously. But the show impressed me because this one woman stood up in the audience and asked a question, and she said, well, when my husband and I fight, she said, I say the meanest things because I'm trying to get a leg up on the argument. And she says, and then I always feel bad later. She says, how do I not just say those mean things while we're in the middle of a fight? And Dr. Phil had a look on his face like somebody had just slapped him. And he looked at the woman, he looked around the audience, and he shook his head, and he goes, people, he says, I'm addressing all of you with this answer. He said, if you don't want to say mean things, he said, don't say them. He said, you have more control over how you treat people than you take. If you give in to being nasty and mean, he said, that's your character flaw, and you're the only one who has control over it. So when you're fighting and you realize those words are going to come out of your mouth, he said, guess what? Don't say them. He was actually perturbed by her question because it was like, oh, my God, grow up and take responsibility for what comes out of your mouth. But she was acting like the victim that mean things came out of her mouth, you know, and he instantly responded to it.
Mm-hmm. Well, and you see that. You see that a lot between people that love each other. You know, it's almost like an attempt for them to make you back down to prove your love. You know,
mm-hmm.
It always amazes me, but it's like almost like a test that you see between couples. You know, I'll see how badly I can treat him or her. And if she really loves me or if he really loves me, I'll get away with it. And it's more proof of the love.
It was never that for me. When Charlie and I, and this is when I was much younger, but when Charlie and I used to get in fights like that, he was very vulgar and I wasn't. But during our fights, I would get vulgar, like tit for tat type of thing. And
yep.
What it was for me, it was almost like a survival mechanism. Like, you're going to get that mean? Good, I can get that mean too. It was almost like I was trying to stand up to him and not allow him to be that mean to me without crumbling. So to me, it was more of a survival instinct. You're going to go there? Well, wait a minute. I can go there too. And what it does is it some of his comments were so cruel or disrespectful that I had to, like, match them with cruelty and disrespect just to show him he wasn't getting over on me. So if there was no love anymore, and that's what people don't understand, when you're going there, you're actually destroying your love for each other, because in those moments, I was not coming from love. I was coming from survival mode and feeling like I was being, you know, attacked. And that can destroy people's feelings over time. And what happened was about 3 years after we got married, I'll never forget it because of the day it shocked him. He started in on me one day, and I chose not to go there anymore. And I was only in my early 20s. But it stopped for me. And he kept taunting me and getting really vulgar, and I just walked out of the room. And he goes, "What's the matter?" He said, "You can't have a discussion." I said, "No." I said, "Because when you talk to me like that, we're not having a discussion." I said, "You get mean and cruel." And I said, "And I don't like the way I act." So I said, "From today forward, Charlie," I said, "we don't have arguments like this anymore. If you want to have them, they're going to be one-sided. But I'm not bringing myself down to your level anymore." I said, "You want to talk? We'll talk." But I said, "I'm not going to stand here and let you treat me like that." And that was the last time we had a fight like that. Because I didn't engage it.
But you can, if you, okay, so everything you just said is I understand. But I want to ask you, do you think that when you fought back, do you think if you'd have said, "Geez, you know, it hurts my feelings that you feel this way. You know, I thought you cared about me. Why are you saying these things to me?" Do you think if you took that avenue that Charlie would have backed off and proven to himself that you really loved him? Or do you think it would have engaged in a more abusive relationship? Which thing do you think, if you'd have always been the submissive one? I know you. I know you were never submissive. But if you did, the point I'm trying to make is a lot of times when couples in particular, not so many friends do this, although I'm sure there are some, but couples kind of like pick the fight to get reassurance that somebody loves them no matter how they behave.
Now,
so
can I never,
you,
so many fights with, well, so you're seeing something that I don't see. Those type of fights are not coming from love, I guarantee you. That is not coming from a place
well,
of love, and it's coming from a place of somebody trying to get over on somebody. It's a matter of power. One person in a relationship is trying to get power, and that's where bullying comes from. Bullying comes from they're not trying to be friends with you. They're trying to get power over you because they feel insecure on some level. That's where bullying comes from, whether it's bullying.
They feel insecure because they think that you don't love them enough. That's the point I'm making, honey. What I'm saying to you is, now this isn't going to happen between two little seven-year-olds in the schoolyard. I'm talking about couples in particular. I'm talking about how many times I've sat here with a husband and wife or a boyfriend and girlfriend and listened to everything they say, and I think to myself, when they really, really start opening up, a lot of the stuff that they do to the other one is to get verification of the other one's love. I can be as mean as I want to Shelley, and she's going to love me anyway. So then I'm reassured again because, like you just said, the deep insecurities, you're absolutely right about that.
I'll have to do another show on that because I experienced something very different than what you're talking about. And the two, the other couples that were in my life back then, the situations they went through with their husbands was more along the line with what I'm talking about. So you've seen a lot more than I have over the years because you've counseled so many people. So evidently there's different reasons for that. But mine was
absolutely.
Mine was never Charlie trying to see, you know, trying to prove how much I loved him. He was abusive. He was into control. It had nothing to do with him trying to prove how much he was loved. He was trying to get things that I didn't approve of. So in order to get them, he tried to make me think less of myself so that I would be submissive and just allow him to do these things that weren't right. So it was a matter of him trying to get over on me, and by doing that, he had to break me down. Mm-hmm. You see what I'm saying? So there's a lot of different reasons.
But that, for me, like if I was counseling the two of you, I would turn to Charlie and say, why are you in this relationship? You don't love Shelley. That's what I'd say to him. I wouldn't mm-hmm. believe that, but I would put mm-hmm. that out there for him to say to me, you're wrong. You know, I do, but she doesn't love me enough so that I can say this, or she doesn't care about me enough so that I can make these comments to her. So, again, the insecurities come in. And most often when somebody is abusive, like I have something I say to people all the time, I know women and men who will do anything to get the undivided attention of somebody that they care about. And that means a little kid who thinks that they're not, maybe a new baby came home, and a little kid is mean to the new baby because they want attention, even if it's bad attention, they want it because
right.
it takes away
right.
from the baby. Or a situation where a woman says abusive things and does abusive things, slashes your tires because they think that you don't love them enough, because any undivided attention is means just means that they have you. So
right.
you
right.
and I think you've seen this in some situations in your lifetime because of things that we've shared with each other. And I'm not always, you know, like my one aunt, this was her answer. If my youngest cousin would say, Mom, everybody's picking on me, she would say to her, without any variables, they're jealous of you. And she would come out to all of us playing, and we would be mean to her because she was a pain. You know, she couldn't keep up. She couldn't do this. She couldn't do that. She was considerably littler. And we'd say, like, yeah, we're really jealous of you because, you know, you can't swim across the pool and we can. And you're mad because we don't wait for you to swim across the pool. And you see, I mean, it gets so trivial when you're little. But when you're bigger and it's an issue that has to do with a couple, I see couples do horrific things to each other just to get some attention, even if it's bad attention. Even bad attention sometimes is worth not having any attention at all. You see what I'm saying? So,
right, and that happens in some cases. That happens in some cases.
Yeah, for sure.
That wasn't the case with me and my ex. It was coming
I'm not analyzing you and Charlie. I wasn't there, and it sounds like Charlie had a maybe even a mild disorder of some kind with his anger issues and things. But I'm
That's a good point that you just made, because Charlie did have a clinical anger issue coming from his childhood, and he ended up taking it out on me. So in that particular case, that's right. And that's something that Izzy mm-hmm. talks about, is that mm-hmm. when he's talking about his rules and how to make people – you know, that you have to be the one to control how people treat you. But if you're dealing with somebody who has some sort of a diagnosis, they're a sociopath or something like that, these rules aren't going to work with somebody like that. So maybe
that's
it's a good
right.
thing we have this conversation, because
yep.
that's an important thing to realize. This works with people of normal frame of mind that can be basically inspired to act a particular way based on how you treat them. And the general, you know, the majority of people will respond to this. Like if you treat somebody like a friend, they'll end up treating you like a friend back, unless they have some sort of a disorder or a mental dysfunction, or they're dealing with some sort of a diagnosis that prevents them from responding the way the majority would.
Mm-hmm. Well, let me say, because in the opening dialogue, I read a little bit of it, but I didn't read all of it, but he has a big warning at the top of these pages that are talking about how to deal with this, and it says, some of these rules may not work in situations where people are seriously disturbed or are determined to hurt or kill us regardless of our response to them. or when we can't communicate with them directly. Please be realistic in your expectations. Now, I would hope that if you're ever in a situation in a schoolyard, in a workplace, at your job, with not a coworker, but say a guest or something like that, and you are being physically attacked, not just verbally, or somebody's holding a gun or a knife to you, this is not the time to utilize any of the things we're talking about here today. This means you're in trouble. And if you know that somebody that you're working with, maybe it is a friend, maybe it's somebody that you know quite well, or maybe you're married to them, and you've sensed early on in the relationship that something is not connected, then none of these things will work because of that disconnect. None of these things will help. None of these things will solve the problem, and they surely will not make the problem go away. We've had extensive airtime directed to mental illness. And if you suspect or believe that the person you're trying to get to a better place with is suffering from those kind of challenges, you are, to put it simply, out of your league. Mm-hmm. And you need outside intervention, and obviously the person that we're talking about needs some outside help. So that's different, and I we've talked about that so much, and we've talked about little kids sometimes can't trust mom. Mom's got a disconnect, a major disconnect, and hurts her children and does things. There's this thing all over the internet right now about the woman that threw her kids out of the window. So you just if somebody's got that kind of a major disconnect, none of this stuff, no talking, no placating, no reverse psychology is going to help you. You need to get away from that person and make sure, if you care about that person gets the kind of help that's going to be suitable to help them. This, none of these things are going to work. This is only going to work if you have a normal relationship without any of those kind of issues or problems or challenges that are going on. And, I had a conversation with somebody that's very near and dear to me last night, and they shared some things with me about another family member, about some of the things they're saying. And I said, this person needs help. Well, you don't think that they're just saying this stuff to get attention? And I said, no, the stuff that they're saying is off the wall. And I said, there needs to be an intervention here before somebody else gets hurt in this, this rapid decline in their mental health. And sometimes that doesn't mean they went out and hurt somebody. It means something they said got taken seriously, and then somebody is in trouble that way. So, it's kind of a different thing. And, of course, I often wondered about your Charlie, because he got so after the two of you weren't together anymore, and he got so large, and when you saw him again, he was so big, so overweight and everything. His issues, I would guess, were very deep. Andy Brené Roman always had a favorite saying about, I've had people make that assumption about me, that I hide a lot of things because I stuff it. Andy used to say, stuff food in your mouth to stuff your feelings down into you. And that's, of course, why, a lot of people who suffer from that kind of anguish are overweight. And I often wondered after I met Charlie and all the stories that I listened to you from you about Charlie, it crossed my mind that that's, but hopefully it sounds like something happened and brought him to a better place. So that's kind of a happy ending to that whole story. Not so nice for you in those days, but it is kind of a happy ending to that story.
definitely a happy ending because he sought me out for the sole purpose of making amends and apologizing to me, you know. But, yeah, he did have a different life than he would have had with me because he ended up being in a marriage that wasn't good for him, and he has three beautiful daughters, and that's the highlight of his life. You know, he just loves them. I never had the opportunity to meet them, but he talks about them all the time. So for him, he did have a happy life, but he did regret that we didn't work out. And his weight gain was, he did stuff things down. He was very badly abused when he was a young man, you know, by his mother, and that was part of the issue with him with me. But that's what I'm saying. There was actually a diagnosis there. I mean, he was hospitalized a couple of times because of how physical his mom would get. And his father was disciplinary and his mother was, but she would go too far. And so he had a lot of those anger issues, and because he never took it out on her, he took it out on me. So there was a diagnosis. That's why I'm saying. So our fights were different than other people's fights were because he was going, his main goal there was to hurt me because he had been so hurt. But I wasn't the person that hurt him. And yet he couldn't seem to break away from that need to now lash out with somebody that was it. You see what I'm saying? So these techniques wouldn't have worked with him, you know. But he ended up going into more counseling after we divorced and ended up because of counseling, ended up coming to terms with it on his own and sought me out. So it was definitely good. But his weight gain was from surgeries he went through. He was loaded up with prednisone and other types of cortisone medications. He had to have both his hips replaced, and that's when he gained all his weight. It completely messed up his metabolism, and he gained over 150 pounds during the surgeries.
Yeah, well, yeah, and I see that happening a lot, too. Plus that there's a being one of those people I know, I use food like people use alcohol or drugs. And
mm-hmm.
I have several things on my comfort menu, and it's how I use it to make myself feel better. And ironically, it's a lot like booze and drugs. I don't usually feel better afterwards. I'm usually in a downward spiral because I gave in to something like that, and how did it, you know, what did it serve? It gave me nightmares all night long, and the next day I have indigestion all day. So it's the same thing, just on a, you know, on a more acceptable level to most people. But
right,
I want
right.
to say,
absolutely.
Yeah.
A lot of foods today actually have things in them that stimulate our needs of them, almost like a drug. That's why when we do our witch doctor show, we should do a show just on that so that people are aware of what ingredients do that. Because there are certain ingredients in food today that if you avoid them, it's easier to control your appetite. But so many foods are laced with things that actually make us crave them. So it's almost like a drug. It's almost like you're being drugged by the food industry because of these particular ingredients they use.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I would agree. I would agree with that. That's a good idea. I think we should do a show tomorrow. I want to talk about the repercussions of surgeries because that's so close to what's going on in my life right now. But the same idea, you know, because I want to talk about what happens after somebody's been intubated, what happens for a surgery. What happens after somebody's been given some of the various drugs that there are out there. You ask, you fill out a simple questionnaire, and if you don't know the man that's doing your surgery or the anesthesiologist that's putting you out, so many things can happen. So many ramifications can take place. So, and a lot of times we as individuals don't know the answers that can keep that from happening because we're not trained enough to understand. So this time with Mike, the anesthesiologist was in there and all she did was talk. She didn't ask him any questions except for, are you allergic to anything? And Mike said no. But he doesn't know about the kind of stuff you're using because he hasn't used it before. So so I want to talk about that tomorrow, and I want to make sure people know that surgeries, unless they're an emergency surgery, should be well thought out, and you should get as much input and as many verifications that you're going in the right direction as you can possibly get. So, because everybody has a different point of view. But let's get back to these rules, because I so many things that we have just said are written right here in front of me. Rule number one is refuse to get angry. Now, obviously, that's often much easier said than done. Anger is a feeling we have towards enemies. If I'm angry with you, I'm treating you like an enemy, and you will treat me back like an enemy. If you can get me angry, I lose, and you will keep on doing to me exactly what gets me angry. And very sadly, in the bullying arena, in a schoolyard or in a gym class or even in a workplace, that's exactly what happens. We have many sayings for that today. So-and-so knows how to push my buttons is one that always comes to my mind. And people do pick up on what buttons piss you off. They just do, especially those kind of people. Rule number two, treat everything people tell you as the words of a good friend, even if they sound angry and hateful. Tell yourself that whatever they're saying, no matter how angry or insulting they may sound, is because they really love you and care about you. I want to make a little excerpt there. Do you have a girlfriend or a best friend when you're growing up who would say to you, you would spend hours on Saturday with your mother picking out an outfit, and you wear it to school on Monday, and your very best friend says, boy, who let you buy that? That's, you know, that looks terrible on you. Don't wear that again. And you're, like, devastated, right, because you spent all this time. Now, you have to kind of, in a situation like that, you have to think that's a point of view from somebody you're pretty sure really cares about you. So what do you do with it? Do you never wear the outfit again? Do you take what she had to say? If you like it, and let me tell you, if you have a good mom and your mom liked it, it probably suits you very nicely. So what do you do with that, Shelley? Do you realize that that friend is maybe a little bit jealous, even though she loves you and cares about you? Or how do you deal with that? Because that happens to a lot of young girls. What do you think? Did I lose you?
Oh, yeah, no, I had muted it, sorry. I was coughing a minute ago, and I didn't want to be hacking during your talk. But I've actually had stuff like that happen to me, like when I was in school and stuff, and I was a tomboy, and I had some friends of mine, and I had one girl even ask me. She said, you know, why don't you wear skirts and dresses? And why do you keep wearing that? And, you know, and I told her one day, I said, because it's what I'm comfortable with, you know, and she just let it go. But she was kind of like picking at me at first. It like bothered her because I guess she was very popular and some of her friends used to make fun of me to her. They wouldn't make fun of me to my face because I never responded to it, so they couldn't get anywhere with me. But they would pick at her because they knew that she liked me and that we were friends. So she said something to me one day, and she was like, you know, why don't you, you know, dress like this or dress like that? You know, and she was kind of like a fashionable. She was beautiful. And I told her, I said, I'm sorry. I said, I'm just not comfortable in that. I like wearing slacks. You know, I said, I like wearing, you know, button-down shirts. I said, it's what I'm comfortable with. I said, if they don't like it, tough. I said, I'm not, you know, I said, I don't care. And she's like, okay. And she never brought it up again. You know, but it, like, bothered her to the point where she, like, had to say something to me. And then after that, she just let it go. And we were still friends. She would still come over and talk to me. But it's like, but when she first said it, she was almost angry with me because I guess she had been being picked on about it. And as soon as I let her know that I didn't care, she kind of didn't care anymore either. You know, she almost kind of adopted my attitude, and then we were fine after that.
Well, and that's, I mean, you know, that's the normal scenario. I'm glad that that's what this brought back to your memory bank, because that is a big thing too. If you have You know, I always used to say to young people, it's really hard to have three best friends because somebody's always jealous. Somebody's always feeling like they're not a part of the twosome. And I think girlfriends, the old saying, two's company, three's a crowd, is more relevant than a couple because it's really hard to keep three girls friends without talking about the other one. So, but I do think that a lot of times our behavior to somebody else is generated by a third person, a third input. And it sounds like this friend, once you, you know, shared your feelings, which she evidently couldn't think of on her own, because she probably wondered too, because she was a different personality than you. So the fact, told her point blank, this is why, and, you know, there's no other reason other than this is how I'm comfortable. And then she accepted it, and the input from other girls were like, she probably would say to them, it's how, you know, it's the way she feels comfortable and the most in her own skin. So even if they picked or made not, no longer meant anything to her because she didn't feel like she was being a traitor to you by listening to them.
And
you know
just to bring the home even more, just so because it, especially if there's any young people listening to this, when I went to my 30-year reunion and my 20-year reunion, I met up with some of these girls that I'm talking about that weren't friends with me, but they were friends with my friends, and they were very popular and very beautiful and everything, and, you know, very much into clothes and all that. And because I never made a big deal out of some of the things they would say, they would get back to me because I really didn't care. You know, I was very comfortable with who I was. I wasn't conceited, but I was comfortable. So I didn't care if other people thought one way or the other about how I dressed or acted because I had a lot of what I considered very, very good friends. I had about 8 close friends in high school in all different areas, and I was fine with that. I was cool with it, you know. But some of these girls that I'm talking about, I met up with as adults 20 years later, and they remembered being friends with me. Now, I remembered who they were, but they remembered being friends with me. And and they were like, oh, it's so good to see you, and they were talking about, and they started reminiscing and stuff, and I'm like, wow. You know, and I was happy, but they remembered us being closer than we were because we were actually friends, one friend removed. And it's because I always acted very lighthearted and never got upset with them and never tried to defend myself. And I think that's kind of what he's talking about. I never defended myself to anybody. I was just like, hey, this is it. This is who I am. Take it or leave it. And that's kind of the attitude I had. And because I never went in battle mode and tried to defend myself and got upset when they would say things, which would have brought more drama into the situation, I was just very nonchalant about it. And so they don't have any memories of any stress dealing with me. So 20 years later, they remembered us being friends, which I thought was, which was actually kind of funny to me.
Well, and it is, but you know, that's something else that I always giggle about, people's memories, what you remember, what somebody else remembers. It's funny. It's really funny because it's so rare that two people in the same time, the same space, that they remember the same things. It's always amusing when I think about that.
Well, the point of that, though, is that a lot of times when people, especially young people, because that's what this book is all about, really, but when you hear nasty or cruel comments being made by another individual, it carries much more weight with you, if you let it, than it does to the other person. My point was that 20 years later, these girls didn't ever remember not having a kind thought about me. It was obvious in the way they were talking to me, you know. And you hear that a lot with people as they get older. They don't ever remember half the mean things that they did, you know, like if they bullied somebody, if they were unkind to somebody. 10 years later, that person isn't even in their thoughts because it's just something that presented itself and it was convenient. So they had the opportunity to be mean to this person for whatever reason, for attention or just to get something off their chest that day, and they picked at this person. And then after that, it's like completely meaningless to them, you know. So if kids could understand that a lot of this behavior has no bearing on their future, you know, you've seen these kids commit suicide now, and if they could just understand that, you know, like 5 years from now, none of that's going to mean anything to any of the parties that are involved with them, you know. And here they're succumbing to it, and they're taking their own lives because this person thinks that of this, or this person thinks something else bad of them. And meanwhile, if they understand these people are going to have no impact on their lives in just a matter of a few years from wherever they're at.
Well, I think that's kind of a life lesson that's important to understand. I agree with you. I think putting so much credence on something that happens to you in second grade is like almost comical because it just won't mean anything in the big picture.
Mm-hmm.
Or in eighth grade or ninth grade or tenth grade for that matter. So that's a good point to remember, and that's, you know, good advice to give to any young person. It seems like this has just changed your whole life, and oh my God, how am I ever going to get through this? And you do. It just doesn't stay that important. It just doesn't. So, like I said, it's amusing when you listen to, you could have friends, especially at a reunion, and hear the rendition of something that happened 30 years ago, and everybody has a different rendition. So it's amusing.
Right.
It is amusing. So number two is treat everything people tell you as the words of a good friend, even if it sounds angry and hateful. Tell yourself whatever they're saying, no matter how angry or insulting they may sound, it's because they love you and care about you. By being critical or insulting, they are really trying to help you improve yourself by telling you what's wrong with you, which is just their point of view, everybody. Doesn't mean it's true, but it is their point of view. So be grateful for everything people have to say to you. This does not mean you have to believe what they tell you or do what they ask, only to be grateful for it. And that just kind of sums up what we just said. So rule number three is don't be afraid. Fear is something we feel towards enemies, not friends. When I am afraid of you, I am treating you like an enemy, and you will treat me back like an enemy. If I'm afraid of you, I'm putting you in the stronger position. This is important. And I automatically lose. Since you want to be the winner, you will keep on doing to me whatever keeps me afraid of you. I want everybody to absorb that. If you will, and this is true with couples as well, men or women that are in a relationship where there's a lot of fear involved, it's not okay. And it's not a good relationship. And it doesn't mean somebody's worried about you and looking out for you. It's a bad, bad, bad situation. And if there's somebody, if you're in like eighth grade and there's somebody that you really fear and you just instinctually fear them, again, that goes beyond, in my eyes, that goes beyond simple bullying.
Right.
So, these things need to be addressed and not ignored, even though Izzy's game plan is to get you to toughen your skin and be able to not give anybody credence and they give up. But if you're really afraid of somebody, I want you to be able to address that.
Right.
For you to defeat me, you do not have to beat me up. In fact, you are not allowed to beat me up, and you know it. All you have to do is make me feel afraid that you're going to beat me up, and you automatically win. When I stop being afraid of you, you no longer defeat me, and I win and get the respect. If I use the bullies to buddies rules, I won't have to be afraid of you because I will treat you so well that you won't want to hurt me. I always referred to that action as killing somebody with kindness.
Right,
and
right.
I know firsthand that is an amazing tool. You have to be, you know, you have to be able to do it with some credence, but it works. It absolutely works. Sometimes you should be afraid of people. If it's the kids threatening you, you actually do go around beating up kids, you should be afraid of them. But if you don't see them beating anyone up, stop being afraid of them. They are just trying to scare you. Now, that's a good point. If you've if you've actually seen, well, it's kind of just what we just said, you know, if you're really afraid of somebody with good reason, stay away from them and let somebody know that you're that afraid of them. But that's, the point is you're probably afraid of them because you saw them beat the hell out of somebody or you saw them do something that you wouldn't do. And you know that, you know, the threats they're making, they may follow through on. So that, again, that puts it into a different arena. Rule 4, do not defend yourself. Well, let's see what he says about this because I didn't read this one. We defend ourselves from enemies, not from friends. Okay. If I defend myself from you, I am treating you like an enemy, and you will treat me back like an enemy. The defensive position is the weaker position. So if I defend myself from you, I automatically lose. You will have no respect for me, and you are likely to keep on attacking me to get me to defend myself. Okay, so let's talk about what kind of defense he's talking about. He's not talking about defending yourself by he pushes you and you push him back. He's talking about you changing or rearranging your behavior, your life, your appearance, and everything to please this person, I think. Don't you think that's what he's saying, Shelley?
Well, yeah, right. It's like you know, like when my friend told me about the clothes I was wearing, I didn't defend myself. I didn't, you know, I didn't get upset, number one. I didn't say, well, you know, well, it's none of their business. They should mind their, you know, I never went there. I didn't look at her and say, I just told her the way it was. I didn't defend myself. I gave her an explanation, which is different. When you defend yourself, it's like you're doing something wrong or there's something deficient in you, and you have to make an excuse. I wasn't. I didn't see anything wrong in the way I dressed. It was just different. And that's so I was very nonchalant in my attitude towards it, and I didn't allow them to make me feel bad through my other friends, and she picked up on that comfort zone I had, but I didn't defend myself. I didn't say, well, and I wasn't wishy-washy. I didn't make excuses. I gave an explanation. When you defend yourself, you start making excuses and you almost get like hyper. You see people and they're defending themselves. They get very excited. And that kind of puts you in that vulnerable state. Whenever you're like that, when you're in defense mode, I mean, think about defensive driving or offensive driving. You know, when you do defensive driving, you're watching out for everybody. When you're offensive driving, you're the one, like, you're taking control. That's probably a bad example because offensive driving is not good. But
right.
But when you're offensive or defensive is when you're in control. When you're offensive, you're taking charge. When you're defensive, you're on the run. Probably better on the football field than driving a car. You know,
right.
think of the lines in football. You have the offensive line or the defensive. Well, the offensive is the one that's going to go for the touchdown.
Right, right. And yeah, that's a different kind of comparison with driving a car and things like that. But same, I get what you're trying to say. And I do think that the minute you get defensive in an interaction with somebody, it means you believe what they're saying because you try to defend yourself. If
right.
you don't believe what they're saying, then you maintain your ground. You don't try to defend yourself. You don't say, well, you know, yeah, I do this, and, well, yeah, you know, it's all I have. Or
here's a perfect example. You got somebody who has terrible acne. This is something so many teenagers deal with, you know. And then you got a group of kids come up to you and say, hey, pizza face, oh, my God, what's wrong with you? How do you let yourself come to school like that? Meanwhile, you're standing there, and you know that you're just covered with acne. Somebody defend themselves would say, oh, I can't do anything about this, you know, and that they would get all excited and start screaming at them, you know, don't be mean to me. It's not nice that you say that. I can't do anything about that. That's being defensive. But if you just turn around to them and said, yeah, I know, man, I'm trying to deal with this, you know, I'm actually going to a doctor right now, and, you know, hopefully within, you know, in a short amount of time it'll all be gone. But say, yeah, it's really a pain in the ass that I got to deal with this. and kind of talk it out like nonchalant, it takes the wind out of them being mean to you because you acknowledge that you are aware you have an issue. You just told them you're doing something about it, but you're also showing them that you're not all bent out of shape by them bringing it to your attention because you didn't act in a way that's defensive. You act in a way that's like, yeah, I know, or whatever, what a pain in the ass that I got to deal with this, but, you know, hopefully in a short amount of time it'll be done with. And your nonchalance almost disarms them. It's very, very deflating to someone who's trying to be mean to you about that thing because you just agreed with them.
Well, and you just did what Izzy tells you to do. You just made them your friend.
Mm-hmm.
You just interacted with them on a level ground that actually asked for their help. And I think that is the perfect way for any kid to – the problem is, of course, is that emotions often get in the way and some kids will just be hurt because they know it's true, and they're, you know, they're tired of hearing it, and their feelings get hurt, and then once their feelings get hurt, then they overcompensate, and there's usually a problem. But what you just said, a perfect scenario would be to say, yeah, you got any ideas what I can do about this?
Mm-hmm.
Because then, again, you just made a connection with them and made friends with them.
Right,
so,
exactly.
Yeah, that is absolutely the smartest way to handle anything like that. I'm not sure, depending on the age, I'm not sure everybody can handle that. I probably know some 35-year-olds that couldn't handle to do that. But most people, I think, if they just realize that, you know, you can't defend that. How do you defend that? You really can't. So you say, you know, yeah, I'm working on it. You got any ideas? And that flips the whole thing around. It's no longer coming from a bad place. It's coming from a friend saying, geez, what are you going to do about your face, man? You know? Put it on a different level. So
right.
I think smart. And it, that's what he's got is rule number 5. Not attack. Attacking is something we do to enemies, not to friends. Even if you attack me first, I will not attack you back. Then you will probably stop attacking me. And that's just what you just did, you know, and that's what you did to your friend about the clothes. You know, you just put it on very simple, even ground, and what else could she say? Then, I mean, if you'd have said, you know, get a life, it's none of your goddamn business what clothes I have on, then all three of them would have been against you.
Right, it would have been confrontational, it would have put them off, it would even have put my friend off, because I would have been pitting her, I would have been saying, pick them or me, because they're being unreasonable. And I just chose not to go there, because I knew that she really liked the other girls, and I really didn't care what they thought of me. So my nonchalance made it easier for her, too.
Well, and that's what he says is rule 6. If someone hurts you, just show that you're hurt. Don't get angry. If you hurt me, I want you to feel sorry and apologize. But if I get angry when you hurt me, I'm showing you my anger, not my pain. If I am angry with you, you will probably get angry with me. Do I want you to be angry with me if you hurt me? Of course not. But if all you see is that I'm hurt, you will probably feel sorry, which is exactly what I want. If kids call you names, it's foolish to tell them they hurt your feelings. They will just laugh at you. But the truth is that it shouldn't hurt your feelings. They are doing it because they want to see you getting upset. If a good friend insults you, it's okay to let them know that they hurt your feelings, but not if kids are just trying to make fun of you. You should tell kids they hurt you mainly if they are causing you physical pain or are destroying your valuables. So you see the difference between those two things.
Right.
And being hurt, it's not always wise. 10-year-old, you hurt my feelings, because they're going to look at you and say, what do you think I wanted to do? Good. Or along those lines, because they're not going to know what else to say to you. So it's going to come from another defensive point of view, and then it's just going to be a bantering back and forth to see who could say the meanest thing. So, but we're out of time, but you know, on Facebook this morning, I put on Facebook that it's amazing how every time we do this show, how much it pertains to all of us and even us adults, and that in every aspect of our life, and it never disappoints me. It's always true. It's always true.
Yep.
So, Rochelle, let's do what we talk about the repercussions of a surgery and all the things that go into it. I'll do a little research, you do a little research, and we'll talk about that. Does that sound good?
Wonderful.
Okay. All right. So everybody go out there and have a great day. God bless. And it's sunny and everything in Florida, but incredibly hot. If you go outside, lots of water, lots of, you know, lots of hydration on a day like today. So God bless everybody. See you tomorrow. Thanks, honey. Talk to you later.
All right, Rain. Have a wonderful day, everyone.
Bye-bye.